This is Stephen Strang. Today on the Strang Report, we're going to talk about some behind-the-scenes things about the story that you probably read on Charisma News or in a lot of other sites about John Crist. You're going to find out some of the things that went on and the decision to do different things and what's happened since. So stay tuned.
Welcome to the Strang Report with Steve Strang on the Charisma Podcast Network. This episode was produced to discuss and address issues within our nation and around the world from a Christian worldview.
Hello, everyone. I'm happy to have in the studio with me two of my colleagues, Dr. Steve Green, who is the publisher of Charisma and the executive vice president of our multimedia group, and with him, Taylor Berglund, who is the associate editor, soon to be editor of Charisma. And we just broke a big story, and it's not a story that we were happy to break. We did it very reluctantly. We took a long time to check everything out and even decide how we wanted to run it. But I thought it would be good to just let people know some of the decision-making that went on. So first of all, let me welcome both of you, and maybe Taylor can just update us a little bit without going into all the details. People can go to our website and read it, or it's been on a lot of other websites, everyone from People Magazine to Fox to CNN, and a lot of people have covered this story. So why don't you tell us what they were covering?
First off, thank you for the introduction. The story in question regards John Crist's mistreatment of women over the last 7-year span. So I became aware of this in February of this year, and at that point started contacting people, trying to put together sources for the story. I was in source gathering mode on this until about, I would say, mid-July of this year, at which point I pivoted over into writing the draft of the story. The details of it are obviously available online, but the gist of the allegations involves that he was sexting with multiple women individually, but at the same time that were overlapping, there was the fact that he was initiating sexual relationships with married women and women in committed relationships, the fact that he was regularly getting drunk and calling women at odd hours, the fact that there was emotional manipulation. There were reports that we heard from multiple sources, could not independently verify, and so thus noted it within the story that he was trying to trade concert tickets for sexual favors. A lot of, quite honestly, very unethical behavior based on the allegations. And so because of that, we then went into in August and September, we were focused on writing drafts of the story, getting edits done on it. Most of the month of October was spent for us editing it with a fine-tooth comb, figuring out the tone, figuring out how we wanted to go about. In the end, we ended up using pseudonyms for a lot of the sources in question, but figuring out how exactly we wanted to do that, what was the right approach. A lot of discussions were had during that month. We also got written statements from all the sources, backed up everything, dotted our I's, crossed our T's, that sort of thing, all leading up to the early November release. So that is how a story ends up taking about 9 months to come out, but that's about as thorough and transparent as we can be in terms of that was the process, that was how it came together. For me personally, I was a fan of John Crist before I found out about all of the allegations, and I found it to be very unfortunate that we had to cover it, but it was also, as soon as I knew that it was happening, I felt that we couldn't not cover it at that point.
Well, let's talk about that, because we're talking about the big picture. You know, with the culture the way it is, this kind of behavior is very common, especially with celebrities. Now, the irony to me is that while all this goes on, and it seems like in our culture almost anything goes, that the Me Too movement has come. And in a way, the Me Too movement is good in that there are at least some sexual boundaries. It seemed like anything went, but now they're saying, no, there's some things that are wrong. However, we're talking in the Christian community, and our standards are not set by the world, but by the Word of God. And there's standards for every Christian, but particularly people who are in positions of leadership. And while John Crist is not in any kind of denominational leadership or ministry, he is very visible, and he makes his living more or less off the Christian community. So the expectations are different. And because he's so prominent, there was a Me Too kind of aspect to this. And over the 40-some years that I've been publishing Charisma, we have dealt with this numerous times, but we've always done it when it was absolutely certain we needed to deal with it. And we probably don't have time for me to recount some of the instances. Often, the exposure would have been done by a different source. So like, for example, the Southern Baptist Church was not exposed by any Christian media, but by the Houston Chronicle, if I remember correctly. And there has been discussions that the body of Christ ought to try to handle these things instead of always looking to non-Christians and the organizations, at least non-Christians. They may have some Christians in the organization. I don't mean to say that. And we also knew that we had to deal with this in a Christ-like way, not to try to ruin John Chris. That was not our motive at all, not to punish him, none of that, but to set a standard. And we haven't mentioned yet that the most significant thing is his response. Now, we knew that we had to go to him out of fairness to get his side, which unfortunately in journalism these days doesn't seem to happen really like it should. So when we were ready to go to press, what was it, maybe 24 or 36 hours ahead?
A little more than 24 hours ahead. I believe it ended up coming out to being about 26.
So I guess we initially contacted his publicist, who got the article to him. We actually sent him the article, is that right?
So what we did is when we made contact with his people, we offered basically two different options of how he would like to best respond to the story. We made the option of if he wanted to do an entire phone call interview with me, in which I would item by item, point by point, go over each thing within the article, each allegation made against him, so that he could fully share his own side of the story. We could answer any follow-up questions that might arise from that. That was one option that was presented, and that was honestly the option that we were hoping that we would end up going for with the story. There was also, we noted in the original email that we were sent, there was some concern that his schedule was very busy at the time, and so because of that, we also offered another option, which was that we sent a paragraph. It is pretty functionally similar, for those of you who have read the story, it's pretty functionally similar to the paragraph that opens right after the first body head. So after Kate's story is done in the introduction and you move into the first section, that first paragraph, a section pretty similar to that in terms of composition, was sent to Chris' publicist, who forwarded it to him. And we said, if you would prefer, you can make a written statement based on that. We can't give you the names of any of the sources, but otherwise you're welcome to ask any follow-up questions to try and clarify the claims in question or the allegations. Ultimately, they did not choose to ask us any follow-up questions or to schedule a phone interview with us. We were notified the morning that the article went up around 10 a.m., that John was going to send us a written statement around noon that day, summarizing his response based on the paragraph we had sent over summarizing the article. So we did make efforts to perhaps go into more detail with him on it, but he chose not to go that route and instead to just send a pre-written statement.
And I don't have his statement in front of me, but of course I read it. I thought he responded very humbly. He acknowledged that he had sinned. He acknowledged that he was asking forgiveness. It was interesting to me to read some of the articles on some of the secular websites to see that they used that wording and played it pretty straightforward. And he also said he was canceling his tour. And since then, just very recently, we found out that his Netflix special, is that what you call it, has been postponed, and also a new book he had now. That did not involve our coverage at all. That's just what was going on in his life, and he decided to pull back and try to get help. And I admire him. I don't know him. I did go to his concert once. I was a fan too. Looked at stuff on YouTube, you know, with the Jesus and the disciples texting each other, and you know, what if they'd had cell phones back then? I thought he had very creative ways to joke about things, but I don't know that I expected him to respond that way, but I think that we wanted him to respond that way. And Dr. Green, you got a text message from a friend of yours that you passed along to me. He said, I just read the John Christ article, and I am saddened by the situation. I pray he gets the help and healing, as do the women he abused. Your team did a very good job with the article. It was very fair As I read it, I didn't feel like it was a hit piece or written in a retaliatory way. It was real news, and he capitalizes the word real, written in an honest and compassionate tone. I read it, and my heart ached for a broken man who is still loved by God and the women he hurt. Thank you for a great real reporting, and he capitalizes real again, and keep up the good work. And, you know, that's very encouraging because that really kind of responds, you know, we didn't say that in the article, but we were kind of hoping that it would come through. We worked very hard to try to be fair. We toned down stuff. There was no reason to be salacious. And I didn't talk to any of the women myself. Taylor did all the reporting. You did a great job. But we got signed statements from the women. They were willing for us to use their names, but we felt that they were victims and that we wanted to guard their identity. There was no reason to let people know who they were, but we had reason to believe that they were absolutely telling us the truth. And in some instances, we were able to verify it from different sources, at least enough to know that it was correct. Now, John's statement, if I remember correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, said that he wasn't guilty of all the stuff he's been accused of. Well, there's a lot of ways, you know, somebody might say it was three times, it was only two times or something like that. I mean, yes, and he had the right to say that. We invited him. In fact, the email that he sent asked for us to print his statement in its entirety, which we did with no editing. We just said, here's a statement, and we played it up prominently. So Dr. Green, do you want to opine about this?
Well, I do. I think a lot of the issues have been covered, but there's some, I think, higher level issues that you taught us that is the essence of charisma and how we handle this, that we have a Matthew 18 responsibility to contact him and to get feedback.
Okay, tell the people who haven't read Matthew lately what Matthew 18 is.
Well, we're just supposed to make sure that we present both sides, that we let the accused speak.
And that we went to them.
And we went to them. We went to them over and over again. We made several contacts that day. I think I lost track at about five that Taylor had continued to come at him and say, we're going to do this. Do you have a comment? I'm still trying to get you. Not angrily or with any vile, just really trying to get a response. But I want to get higher than that. The place I want to be is the why. Because I've had to answer that a few times today, so has Taylor. On social media, people ask this question, why did you feel that this couldn't have been handled privately? We have two reasons. One, we don't know how many more women are out there who were contacted by Mr. Crist and could potentially have been contacted this weekend. Taylor had an urgency about him, as the longer we wait with this story, the more people are going to be potentially contacted, in whatever sense that word means. So that was one major issue that drove us, that we want this stopped, because social media can respond however they want. We have a higher calling. You founded this magazine on the principles that we're going to cover the church, what's going on, particularly in the charismatic church, but specifically to give spiritual guidance to issues of the day. All right, so that was one. So a very close brother to that, and you and I have talked about this one, Steve, several times, and that's the pastoral response. That I can't imagine a pastor friend of ours who John might have gone and borrowed their church or had a youth night or did his shtick, which is good. He's a high-quality entertainer. No question about that. But then when he invites women to his room after the show, that begins to affect the pastorate. That affects the church. And you have always carried that high responsibility to report on this kind of thing in a way that if we know it, we're obligated to tell it, that we're guilty if we don't. If we don't share the news, and we don't, in my 5 years here, we haven't done a story like that. It's never, not on my watch, not since we've been together, Steve, have we had to tell this. And it's grievous. Neither one of the three of us like this.
Well, we don't go looking for these kind of stories.
No, they came to us.
It came to us. And, you know, there's, you know, sadly, there's misconduct at many levels by many people. And we're not out to try to expose this. But we felt that for whatever reason, the Lord dropped this in our lap and we needed to be responsible. You know, with the Roman Catholic controversy and also Southern Baptist, part of the charge was that they swept it under the rug. Mm-hmm. And while we don't have ecclesiastical oversight of these people like they would have, mm-hmm. We felt that we couldn't just sweep this under the rug, but we also wanted to deal with it in a redemptive way, which came through to this person who sent us a text. Hopefully it came through to other people. And I think, you know, I'm having to speculate, which is always dangerous, but I'm speculating that John Crist himself must have understood the tone that we were doing it and decided to respond this way. He could have responded angrily, said, I'm just going to become a secular comedian where people won't, you know, care what I do or whatever. And there have been people who have responded like that, you know, where they just leave the faith and just go fully into the world.
Two things about John. We saw two things that we prayed for, confession and repentance. And from there, we leave it in his hands and the Lord's hands for the restoring process. We don't restore him. We didn't pull him down. So the restoration comes because I think first, the first signal is open confession. We saw that. The second was to say that I've repented. Now then he'll turn. If he's truly repented, he'll turn. And that's between him and the Lord. And then to the people who make decisions on if he's been restored and can put him back on a platform. The whole thing to me is about calling attention to it and then praying for restoration. That's where we all need to be. Anyone listening to this podcast, pray for the restoration of this talented young man. He deserves the opportunity to be forgiven, to be restored, and to go back to work. What's the time frame? That's up to God and the people who make those decisions. That's not ours.
And, you know, who knows if he'll ever listen to this podcast. Maybe somebody will send
He's probably
send
had
it
enough
to him.
Already.
But, you know, if John is listening, I hope he knows that we hold nothing against him. We're thankful that he responded this way.
He thanked Taylor, sir. Another person, wasn't John, had thanked him and said that just, you know, we appreciate you asking us and coming to us in this way and giving us a chance. We didn't really have to go to him. We could have reported what we found and went with the story because we had so multiple witnesses. But spiritually, we were obligated to go to him. And they appreciated that. They liked it.
And so, Taylor, this is, I'm going to guess, it's probably the biggest story you've ever covered, is it?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say.
That's fair to say. What have you learned through this whole process?
I mean, obviously, it's easily the heaviest thing that I think I've ever worked on, just thinking about the weight of it all. You know, at a certain point for me, I was thinking through it, and I was just like, this is, you know, a scenario with not a lot of great endings possible. I mean, we're in a lot of ways, it felt like we have a few hard choices here. Like, if we run the story here, then there's a very good chance that by the actions of my reporting, that who knows whether for good or for a season, but that I'm going to be ruining this guy's life and certainly his career.
But you didn't do those things.
Yes. And then on the other hand, though, as you pointed out, Dr. Green, we can't be complicit, though, in hiding.
That's right.
In hiding this and covering this up. There's no way for me that once I knew this, that I could have not reported on it with a clean conscience.
You couldn't look the other way.
I couldn't. And I think that that's just a part of the sinful world that we live in a lot of ways, that unfortunately this situations like this will come up. I've seen a sentiment on Twitter a lot of just like, in many ways, people weren't meant. I forget who said this, so I apologize. It's been an absolute blur the last 24 hours trying to just see everything. I've basically had to silence my phone because I was getting something every 5 seconds. But someone was pointing out that in a way, people weren't meant to have the sort of power that I think that we give to a lot of our leaders, to a lot of these entertainers, to a lot of these celebrities. In many ways, it can often be a corrupting force. And I think there's a lot of ways that our systems can often feed into this lack of accountability. One of the shocking things that came up to me as we were working on the story was just the many ways that there were so many people who seemed to know that this was happening, and yet it had been allowed to go on without anyone actually publicly reporting on it. And so because of that, some people knew, but many, many more people were being hurt because they didn't know. And my main hope with the story is just that I think that when I got John's comment, I was appreciative for that, just to be able to get both sides of the story. And when I read the words in it, I think, you know, it's between John and God, whether he has truly changed and has turned over a new leaf. And if I hope this spurs him to real repentance.
Didn't you feel he wanted it to come out? Didn't he actually
say
that?
There were some quotes that I heard from witnesses that talked about how And they're in the story about how he wished this would all just come out someday or that sort of thing. And so I don't know. You know, I think it's easy to say those sorts of things flippantly in the moment. I don't know what he wanted. That goes beyond my ability to speculate. But I know that for me, I reached a point where it was like, well, if this story comes out, at the very least, whether or not he has changed, he can't keep doing this because people know. Mm-hmm. Because the information is out there, because the truth is out there, he can't do this to women anymore, at least the pattern that he had established. You know, maybe there might become a new pattern or something like that. But we're closing off that avenue. And in one way, I hope that, by denying him that avenue, forces him to actually change and for the better, as opposed to just hiding it better. But, you know, I can't speak to whether or not he is going to change or not, but I can speak to that I have gotten a lot of feedback from people who are very grateful that the story came out. I've heard from even more people that were not featured in the story, now that the story is out, contacting me and being like, yep, this happened to me. I had a similar experience to what you described. So I know it was beyond even what we reported.
Yes.
And for that, I'm thankful at least that that chapter has come to an end and that it can't be reopened. And I just hope that the publication of the story gives vindication and validation to so many women who were hurt by his actions, and who felt hurt by the church and many of its leaders not taking action to stop him when they did know.
And Steve, you said something I want to address, that you wondered why God dropped this story in our lap of all the places it could have been dealt with. I think there's some love for John Crist, and he's done some good in restoration, his heart. God knows his heart. And so I believe he knew that, the Lord knew that Steve Strang's magazine would handle this right, that God authored this magazine. He set it to be. He's been behind this. He's been with us from the foundation of your magazine, from the day you founded it. God's been leading us. And I believe that this kind of story needed to be in the right hands and dealt with the love and concern and compassion that we showed it. And not one of us celebrate this story.
No, we don't. And we hope that there's healing for John, but also for the women. We're concerned about the women who were hurt, and maybe women who have even been hurt by other people will be encouraged that this kind of thing is not always swept under the rug, and that they're...
That the church does care about sexual and emotional abuse.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I've been in the church for a long time, and there's an assumption this doesn't happen. You know, even in our own company, if you remember with Clarence Thomas, what was it they accused him of? And we realized, you know, this would have been in the early 90s, that we had no guidelines about dealing with, what word would you use, sexual abuse, you know, yes. Mistreating women, and we didn't have policies because we didn't think it was necessary. We thought it would never happen, but we realized that we were vulnerable, and so we just set some policies, some internal policies. But I use that as an example of how, you know, we came up through, we were actually started at a big church where not long after we went on our own, the pastor was found to have done a lot of this and had to step down. And ironically, the night that he stepped down, it was a Wednesday night, they were going to have a pastor's conference. And people had come in from all over, and maybe a week before, when it was obvious that something was going to come down, they canceled it. But they couldn't get the word to everybody. This was before the days of text messages and cell phones, and also I was told this by someone else. I'm just repeating what I was told, that some people were driving in as a part of vacation. And so there were people who showed up thinking that they were going to a pastor's conference and hear this pastor got up and publicly confessed and stepped out of the pulpit. And a wise friend of mine told me that he felt that probably there were people in the room who, after seeing that happen, would avoid that kind of problem because of the example. Mm-hmm. Now, I may not be saying the best way I can.
That's clear.
You know, they didn't come expecting it. So I can only hope that people who read this and see how it was handled might be able to avoid it. Maybe the Holy Spirit would use that in some way. We didn't do it for that purpose. But, you know, there's always a lot of spin-off things that happen. And I just felt it was important to take a few minutes to write about this. You know, I mean, other than putting in a little editor's note about how we didn't use the women's names. And frankly, they were willing to do it. But I thought, you know, in a year or 2 years, maybe they regret that they let the whole world know that they had been vulnerable, you know, in this way. And we could tell the story without saying their names. We know their names. And the fact that they were willing to let us use their names, it gives a lot of credibility to what they told us. And, you know, a lot of the things that we're facing now with all the controversy in Washington is there's all these anonymous sources, one person saying something, you know. And here it was, of course, not just one person, the people weren't anonymous. So, you know, there's a lot that we could say about that as well. And hopefully the listener will learn something, maybe learn a little bit more about the journalistic process, or at least learn how we try to do journalism according to the Word of God and the principles that we believe apply to us as believers and not just journalists. A lot of people have come to our website. This has gotten more attention than we've gotten for anything in a long, long time, but we did not do it for that reason. Absolutely not. If we could have avoided it, we probably would have. This is not pleasant at all. You know, like the man that sent the text to you, you know, approach us with a broken heart and just say, for the grace of God, you know, it could have been any of us
and
in
that's
that kind
a good,
of situation.
A good thought as we end, Steve, is that we should all build our guardrails and to be very careful of how we protect ourselves and what we will allow and not allow, and what we think about and don't think about. Just build our own guardrails, mind our own house, our own business, because there, but by the grace of God, go all of us, because we're under attack.
Yeah. I think it's a good opportunity for individuals to make sure that they have a system of accountability in place for themselves, but I think it's also important on a systemic level, because all it takes is one individual who is not keeping themselves personally accountable, or that their accountability system feels that they cannot speak to them on that I think that we also need systemic systems within the church, within ministries, that prevent these sorts of abuses of power from happening. So,
and part of it is just setting standards that, you know, not in an ecclesiastical or governmental way, but there is such a thing as public opinion. We got out of Vietnam, for example, when public opinion turned against the war. So public opinion is really not the right word. I don't know of a word, but that in the church, we have these standards and we won't put up with this. I don't know that one article and one news site makes that statement, but in a small way it does. And maybe it'll encourage other people that are listening, people that read the article. So, you know, we're speculating. I hope that our heart comes through even in the way we're talking about this. There's so much more that probably could be said. We probably could have said it better. But we just came in the studio and decided to share our hearts and to reminisce a little bit about the last couple of months. And it gives us a chance to publicly, or gives me a chance to publicly thank Taylor and to just say how proud I am of you
and how you've
handled this. And
very maturely.
And Dr. Green was in charge of this much more than I was. I was kept in the loop because, of course.
Well, you were writing a book.
Yeah, I was off writing a book during most of this period. But I was kept in the loop as we moved along. And, of course, we had to make decisions about how
you
we were going to
handle
things.
Every single
word? Every single word, I think, of every single version. So maybe this will give people also a little bit of insight, as I mentioned earlier, into the process.
Yeah.
So with that, I guess I'll wrap up this episode of the Strang Report. And thank you for listening. And I'm grateful to people who share things. It helps my podcast numbers, which have really taken off lately. So a little plug there at the end that if you think people would be interested in listening to, you know, forward this or put it on social media.
CPNshows.com.
Absolutely.
That's right.
All right.
So thank you to both of you, and thank you to my listeners for tuning into the Strang Report on the Charisma Podcast Network. God bless you. This is Stephen Strang. I want to introduce my listeners to Charisma Magazine if you don't already get it. Or if you do get it, you could respond to this special offer and we will continue your subscription into the future. The offer is to give you both of my books on Donald Trump, God and Donald Trump, and the new one, Trump Aftershock. These are a value of just less than $50 plus 2 years of charisma, which costs around $40, and you can get the whole thing for only $39. Now, let me repeat. You get both of my best-selling books and 2 years of charisma for only $39, and all you have to do is go to this site, trumpbooks.charismamag.com. I hope you'll take advantage of this offer. Even if you have read the books, you know, it's always nice to have a new book, especially one signed by the author. It makes a good birthday present. Later in the year, it'll make a good Christmas present. And I hope that you'll take advantage of it because it's a good offer and it's my way to try to connect you with charisma and also get more copies of my book out there. I'll repeat it, but the good thing about a podcast is you can back it up and listen to it again. It's trumpbooks.charismamag.com.
Thank you for listening to The Strang Report with Steve Strang. To read more from Steve, visit his blog, The Strang Report, on charismamag.com. Again, it's The Strang Report on charismamag.com.
This has been a production of the Charisma Podcast Network. Steve and Joyce Strang are the founders and owners of CPN. Dr. Steve Green is the executive producer of the Charisma Podcast Network. We intend to honor God with every podcast and remain thankful to our advertisers and supporters who make these podcasts possible.